Hey guys, me again. Thanks for coming along. Your ball tale this week comes from Chris Chopping. Chris is a stand-up who has been a regular on the Cardiff scene and beyond for many years. Very funny man, as you will hear for yourself after another blast of everyone's favourite jingle. Chris Chopping.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Ball Tales. So I think, you know, that might be the first time I've said it in the actual voice of the show, which is not the pre-recorded bit, because I didn't have a title when I started it. It was just called Football Podcast.
So you just hoped something would come up later down the line and
yeah.
You tried to avoid the topic?
Yeah, entirely.
Fine, okay.
Yeah, if you listen back to the James Dunn and Dan Kiss episodes, there's just loads of dodging. And like,
sure,
yeah.
And why wouldn't you listen back to them? They're quality half hour or so's of entertainment.
Exactly,
yeah.
Audio material. Yeah, it's they're doing actually all right. It's good. Excellent.
Good.
Now, we've got that covered. You're here to talk about sport.
Yes.
Are you a cavalier? That's not the word. Connoisseur. Are you a connoisseur of sport?
I'm not much of a sportist.
No.
I do own a sport ball somewhere in my parents' garage.
Yeah.
But I don't have easy access to it.
Is it pumped up?
I doubt it at this stage. It was when I left it.
Yeah.
But that was some time ago now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a bit nervous about coming here when he invited me to come do this podcast. Well, what am I going to talk about? Because I've been quite openly and publicly ambivalent about football in particular, all sports and football in particular. Not really fast, but then I started to think about it and I realised I have quite a lot of memories of football in all its various forms, but playing it, watching it, Subutio, computer games, post-based fantasy leagues. You know, I gave football a bloody good go.
Yeah, it sounds like you did, yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised. I kind of blanked a lot of that out of my mind. But I really
think that's why it works. I think, like, it's so, because it is, like, the national game. Well, I suppose we're in Wales, so it's not.
Mm.
But it's very much just, you can't avoid it. It's like the Beatles. It's
no,
just sort
it
of in the public consciousness.
More than the Beatles. It is.
Yeah.
I've never gone, I fancy a pub lunch. I'll go and find a nice pub to sit in and have a meal.
Mm.
And then got to the pub and found, it's impossible to grab a table or get served or have a nice conversation because we're just crowded and drowned out by the sound of people watching the Beatles on the screens. That's never been an issue. Like, the Beatles, I love the Beatles. I don't think
I'd like
Beatles,
to find that pub, though, where that is the issue.
Yeah, I would. I mean, that would be my local. I would move nearer to it.
But then we'd be the people crowded around the TV annoying the people that don't want to watch the Beatles.
Well, it's time the tables turned. I mean, I don't know. Maybe people who don't like the Beatles do feel the Beatles encroach on their lives. But I don't feel that football, if you don't like football, it is
a pain
everywhere. I realise this is kind of a pro-football podcast and I've been quite negative.
Not necessarily. It's more about how it's, you know, I'm clinically addicted to football, I think it's fair to say. I mean, I've got no clinic has told me that.
Sure.
I've been to many. But I'd say I don't like football.
No.
I watch it every week. And, like, there was a pre-season friendly last night. It's just essentially fitness training televised. I watched 90 minutes of that. I don't like it. I can't get out.
Is there, like, an equivalent of a methadone program that you can get onto to kind of wean
netball?
Yourself off?
I don't know.
Just,
like, yeah.
Just half an hour of netball,
like,
and then going back. It's just not giving me the buzz, and I stick with the netball.
They can't move, honestly. Like, they just have to pass to each other. Yeah, maybe that's...
And then eventually you'll be clean.
Yeah, that is a good idea. So when series two of this is a netball based based show,
I will take the credit and blame for that happening.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. I think that's a solid idea. But yeah, it's not necessarily pro football. It's more about childhood football, how it turned you into the person you are today.
Yeah.
In comedy and in life.
Okay. Well, I can talk. Yeah, I can do that.
You can do that. Okay.
Let's hope. Let's find out.
That's cool. Where did you, like, most podcasts you listen to? They do like research on their guests, and they
sure.
sort of find out stuff. I don't even know where you grew up, like, and that's quite important, I guess.
It's fine because I have brought that information with me.
Thank God.
I grew up in Bedfordshire.
Okay.
In a small town called Flitwick, where
yeah.
there wasn't much to do.
No.
It was kind of an idyllic place to be a child because there was lots of fields and greenery and you could go out on your bikes and you were safe.
Cool.
But then when you became a teenager, you go, it's not even a cinema. This is, this is bullshit. So,
yeah. When you realise there are other things than fields.
It
was a bit of a letdown. Yeah.
Just a bit.
So was there a lot of sport being played at that time? Was it a sort of football crazy town?
Well, there wasn't a local team.
I was going to say, yeah, I was trying to work out with the, because all my geography I know through football, and there's no Bedford in the big leagues anyway. Who's like the closest big team?
The closest, I wouldn't say big team, Luton Town.
Okay, yeah. Close,
like my town was sort of equidistant between Bedford and Luton, and so Luton was the biggest local team. But then there was kind of a sense of Luton. It was the big town that people kind of said disparaging things about.
Well, Shelbyville.
Yeah, so I knew some people supported Luton, but my best friend supported Liverpool, and because he was my friend, I supported Man United so we could squabble. Which I think that's normally the route, isn't it? If you don't know about football, you don't support the same team as your mate, you support a different one so you can argue about it.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't have had that advanced knowledge at the time to think of, you know, I'll generate some conflict here.
I think it was instinctual. Maybe I didn't want to argue. Maybe I just thought, like, well, I don't want to be seen like I'm copying him. I'll pick my own side.
You went for Man United, little niche team, of course.
I mean, I basically stopped supporting Manchester United and following all football when I realised I was exactly the sort of Manchester United fan that gives the other Manchester United fans a bad name. I had to pack it in, really. By the time I was in my early 20s, I would have stopped telling people
just checked
if they
out.
Asked, oh, Manchester United, like, I just would have, I don't really support anyone.
It's just too many follow-up questions, isn't it, after a while?
Yeah, it is, you know, a lot of people don't have to face that. If you go, I like Russian and Diamonds, people go, oh, fine.
Exactly, yeah.
Manchester United, oh, where were you born then? How far were you from the stadium?
Yeah, no, exactly.
How many times have you been to Manchester? Bedfordshire, miles from the stadium? None times to Manchester.
Yeah, it's too much grief. Yeah, I understand that completely. It's all small talk, essentially. Like, I think talking about football is a second language, effectively, and, like, it's got quite a, I don't know, quite a cumbersome one as well if you haven't put the work in.
Yeah, and I didn't. Even though I did do a lot of football-y stuff, I never really was part of the in crowd of real football lovers who really were into it. My friends were more than me.
What was your first sort of memories of, like, playing football, like, in a team or just in the park?
I started playing football at school.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly what age, but it seemed to be a crossover where it went from all the boys playing war at playtime to all the boys playing football.
Right. That must have been a terrible day for you.
It wasn't. Well, the thing is,
but you are a pacifist, famously.
Notoriously. I was never a fan of war because in the broader sense, and in the playground. Because when you're playing war as a child, you've just got people going, bang, you're dead. And you're going, well, no, I didn't get shot. No, I shot you. No.
It's not objective.
No, there's also these arguments of people going, no, I shot you. No, I'm still alive. No, you're dead. And it just descended into squabbles. And you didn't have any real bullets. There was no way of proving who'd been hit. So at least with football, there's an actual ball that had to pass between two actual jumpers. And I mean, yes, there could be.
I mean, I'm seeing another
quibbling.
Problem there.
Because there's not uprights. So you just go, oh, that was out, that was wide, whatever. But at least there's a ball, you know, being actually kicked around.
I think that's a better system than war.
I was kind of happy to move up. But to be honest, either football or war, I would rather, if I could, go away and kind of play with the girls. And the main game I remember the girls playing was Tooth Fairies.
Explain the rules of this game, please. This sounds excellent.
It wasn't so much a game with rules as a sort of ongoing improvised soap opera. And I was sometimes allowed to join in, along with another boy called Michael Simpkins. I remember playing it. Just sort of, we would largely be told what to do by the girls. They were more familiar with the game.
Veterans.
And that was my preference, really. There was a bit more, you know, dramatic, creative. I think that I wasn't into football and things, but even after a while, even the girls started to go, well, these guys are a bit weird. Why do they want to play our girls' games? And it wasn't an age where being in with the girls and hanging out with them gained you any sort of cool or kudos with the other boys. No one was going, oh, how's he getting those girls to
play? Yeah, how's he being a fairy? I want to be a fairy. Yeah. No, I can't see that. Yeah.
So you ended up having to go, oh, I'll give in, I'll play football, I guess. I'll just succumb to that.
To the ritual that we all do. Like, where on the pitch did you put yourself, or were you put?
Well, when you're playing on the playground like that, it is just every man for themselves sort of running about. I did play in kind of more structured. I was thinking about this. I was on school football teams.
Right.
And I don't really know how that happened, because I didn't really like football, mm-hmm. and I wasn't very good at football. Like, I wasn't the worst kid at school, but I think I was probably the worst of the people who were trying.
Okay, yeah. And that's a good image of where you
and,
are. Yeah.
But I must have, and like, there was no parental pressure to do this, other than because like, my parents weren't interested in football, other than the desire for me to do some sort of exercise, and it's not conscription, you know. At some point,
yeah, but somehow
not,
you were,
and
still...
not everyone in the year was doing it. It was only so at some point I must have opted in, and the only thing I can think is my friends were really into it, and so I wanted to do what they were doing, and I think in a game that was orchestrated amongst us as friends, I would probably have ended up in defence, because that's the least glamorous position.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids, they want to score goals, they want to be playmaking midfielders, they don't want to be just in defence at the back of it. But I think anything that was orchestrated by adults and given any sort of tactics at all, they'd probably have tried to lose me in the midfield. Not that the midfield is an important role, but you can kind of do less harm. Like, if the ball gets past you, you're not the last line of defence.
That's true.
They realise you're not going to score, but they also don't want you making it difficult.
Yeah, sort of safety in numbers type thing. You just
But also, I was often a sub.
Yeah.
In fact, I was the kid who got to go on because they promised everyone would get a half.
Yeah,
you know,
I've been there.
The
I remember.
Yeah.
I was very much the second choice left back.
Right.
It was my patented position that I really made my own.
Sure. Well done.
Yeah. It was a special time.
The understudy.
Yeah.
I've learned all the lines.
That's a really
very keen,
beautiful way of putting it. Yeah, I was understudying someone who could kick the ball a lot further than me. just studying him with my clipboard and
take
tears.
One day that will be me.
Yeah.
If I'm just going for a high tackle on him on the playground,
yeah,
my time.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's cool. So you played. So you were sort of a rogue. I mean, if I say rogue, because you didn't really know why you were in the team.
Yeah.
You just like a roaming midfielder.
Yeah. I remember at one point deciding that I wanted my nickname to be Ghost. that is what I would have on the back of my shirt, and I'd be kind of ghosting up and down the field, in between the players, stealing the ball and passing it on, and being kind of elusive and effervescent in my play. Right, I didn't use the word effervescent.
Yeah,
as a 10-year-old, there was a big reality gap between that nickname that I'd created for myself,
mm-hmm.
and tried failingly to get people to use, and my actual abilities. I was sort of slow and sluggish and couldn't hit the ball with any power or accuracy.
It's tough. It's unlike a ghost, really, isn't it? It's hard to set your own nickname, though. I think that's difficult.
Yeah, never really works out.
Yeah, I think nicknames, I mean, the worst ones, the ones that stick, that are given by other people.
I was called Chipmunk because I had a high, squeaky voice.
Oh.
And that was less cool than Ghost, but in fairness, in hindsight, was much more accurate.
More accurate, yeah.
And
you've got to go with accuracy.
And it suited me, yeah.
Oh. I'm trying to get the picture. So, you're in midfield. There's obviously loads of different types of midfielders. You can be... Were you a talkative player? Were you barking orders at people? Were you... What were you up to in there?
I was sort of...
In the engine
room. Chasing after people, hoping for the best, not really calling for the ball, or, you know, because aware that if I got the ball, there'd be a lot of pressure to do something useful with it or not. And I mean, I was the sort of kid that when the ball came anywhere near my head, instead of going in for a header, I would shy away from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I realise that to some of your listenership, they probably consider I've revealed myself as the worst form of coward in the world. But I still kind of feel like I was right about that.
Yeah, but it's how you style it out as well. Like, I remember doing that occasionally, and you've got to pretend like, no, I was, you know, that was a tactical move. I was ducking, I was just, you know...
I thought someone behind me called for it.
Exactly, I was trying to catch up on the term. But yeah, in terms of like losing brain cells, you probably did well.
Well, I can't think of any other situation in life where someone punts something solid at your head, and you go, yeah, I'm just going to go in full force with the head, meet it halfway, and see who comes out victorious. If someone throws something or kicks something at your head, you do get out of the way. I think wasn't a good rule on the football field, but it's a good rule for life, an overall.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I've never thought of that. Like, there's rules in football, but yeah, as a general rule, probably not for the real world. Like, maybe there's some outdated things, like the pass back rule was a rule taken out of football. Maybe heading is the next one to go.
Well, what's the football quote? Football isn't a matter of life and death. it's much more important than that. And maybe football is the only place where if something's twatted at your head, you have to meet it full on with your own head, because it's the only thing that's more important than life and death. But I'm happy with life and death. Leave me out of football. That's the case, really.
Let's kick life and death out of football, as the campaign goes.
Life and death out of football.
Yeah. At someone's head.
Yeah.
And see what they do with it.
Keep kicking things at people's heads. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah, there won't be any racism in football when everyone's dead. So,
well, yes.
I'm not sure that's what they're going for.
Mass genocide is the answer.
Yeah.
And you know that. You know that for sure. As John Lennon sang.
He did.
Yeah. Or was that Love? We don't know.
I don't know. We'll go to the pub and watch the Beatles and find out. As we do every Saturday.
I'm going to set that pub up.
I think it's something like a Super Sunday where, it's just like, maybe not even the Beatles singing songs, maybe just like a documentary.
Sure, yeah, you know. Just
sitting up with their scarves, just sitting
just
down.
Just footage of them turning up at the
2 hours
the
of John Lennon in
airport.
Bed.
Yeah.
With Yoko, like, I mean, it could catch on.
I would watch that.
Regularly, every week. A favourite player growing up, or, like, did you model yourself on a player? Was there anyone that you saw and thought, I'm a bit like him?
Do you remember there was a player, I think his name was Thomas Brolin?
Thomas Brolin. I do vaguely remember, yes.
It might not have been Thomas, it was definitely Brolin or Brolin. And he basically was like a kind of really, like he was signed from somewhere in Europe to a Premier League club.
Yeah.
And he became a big running joke in Match magazine at the time, because he basically came over here as like a big prospect of like, oh, this is going to be the guy, he's a big European signing, he's going to be good news, and just got fat.
Right, yeah.
And just got really fat and bloated.
Okay.
And if you saw pictures of him on the pitch, it was genuinely cartoonish, because like, it might be that if he was sat here in the room now, he'd just look like an average bloke. But footballers who were paid for a living, this was the 1970s when George Best and people like that are getting away with like drinking Guinness and then coming out to play. This was, you know, at the time we were ready, people are taking it properly seriously. All footballers,
dieting and
all footballers were in good shape and tone. So by comparison to them, he looks like a fat mess.
I typed him into the Googles to remind myself of him. The first thing that's come up is Thomas Brolin's nightmare game against Leeds. And when that's like
your first hit.
Yeah, your first hit.
I mean, he probably is happy with that, because at least he doesn't mention his waistline.
Not his nightmare games. It's a weird way of putting it. But he's, Swedish former professional footballer, played for AC Parma. Doesn't actually mention the Premier League on his Wikipedia.
That bit's been written out of history.
I think he's just furiously editing it away.
Barely played for a Premier League club.
He signed for Leeds United in 95.
Oh, there you go.
That's what he did.
He probably scored. He had a nightmare game against Leeds United, they say. Is it after or before?
Maybe that's just a really bitter Leeds fan that's gone. He's not playing for
he's
us.
He's basically against us at this point.
Yeah, he's not fit to wear the shirt.
Yeah, why is
he retired at 28.
That's early, isn't it?
That is very early, yes. Like, I think. And that probably sums up his career more than, what a huge letdown. So he was the player that you saw as,
maybe not at the time, but looking back, I think that's who I. And do you know what? If I had a career as a professional footballer, I think I'd settle for that.
Retiring at 28.
Well, because he ate what he wanted. I like my food.
Yeah.
He became an object of ridicule, but I'm a comedian. I don't mind if people laugh at me.
Yeah.
And he was still picking up the paycheck. Presumably pretty well paid.
If you can retire from anything at 28...
You're doing all right, aren't you?
I think
I mean, I don't think... Again, in the 90s, I think footballers, maybe not as much as they're paying now, but they were already getting a pretty decent wage.
They were getting, I think, like, retirement wages, if that's
basically,
a phrase.
You're basically not putting enough work in, but you're still getting the money till your contract expires.
Yeah, that's pretty extraordinary.
I wonder what it would have been like, because you know footballers have a reputation for going out on the pool, going out to clubs...
Mm-hmm.
You know, and going out and trying to meet girls, and their girls going, oh, I want to meet a footballer.
Yeah.
And because they've got good looks and they're athletic and they've got money
minted,
and all these things. And if they went out as a team, as Leeds United, and they're going, oh, this is Thomas, he's on the team as well. So that's right, ladies, I'm one of the players. And they're just going, nah, he must work in the offices.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's not a player, there's no way.
Yeah,
like,
that's someone's uncle.
Yeah, he literally would not have believed he was a professional athlete. They'd have gone, no. He just works in admin.
Yeah,
he's been
dumped
by his girlfriend. The players have offered to show him a good time. Like,
he's won a competition. He's not.
Yeah,
he's not
don't worry. We'll win Man U. It's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
I would like to have been in the club when that was happening. I'd be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, that would have been great. Oh, Brolin. Oh, I feel like we're giving him a hard time, but
No harder than he received. This is relatively mild ribbing.
Yeah, yeah.
Compared to what he got week on week, day on day in the press, presumably.
Yeah.
So.
Retired at 28, though. There's a player that used to play for Chelsea called Winston Bogard, who was like his Dutch player just brought in, and it just complete disaster signing, didn't work out. I think he played about 10 minutes for Chelsea. But what he'd do was live in Holland, live in Amsterdam, fly in to do training at like 10 in the morning. He'd train on his own because they didn't want him to train with the team because he was terrible. And then he'd fly back and be home before lunch.
But if he was training on his own, could he not have done that in Amsterdam?
I mean, he had like a 4-year contract that he had to run down, and basically they isolated him.
Yeah, but could he not,
like,
if
the
he
point
being
stands,
isolated,
yeah.
He could have done his training in Amsterdam. He could have gone, yeah, guys, I've done it again today. All right, cheers.
Yeah, like,
thanks for letting us know.
He'd video it in and they wouldn't even watch the video. Like, they clearly didn't care, so yeah. If we can go back in time to about 1997 and give him that message, maybe he can save a lot of air miles.
Yeah. Again, that sounds like a pretty sweet job, though. When because you're still getting a check for your contract runs down and you don't have any of the pressure of actually having to perform in the game.
Can you imagine, like, if comedy was like that? If it was just a case of, like, you get... Because if you get through 10 years in football, you and your family are sorted forever. So,
yeah.
Like, what? I can't even...
How much money
would have to be in comedy for that to be viable?
If you're going, I've been signed by Avalon Management United.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a weekly wage of several hundred thousand.
Yeah,
going
to stadiums every week to play in front of angry people.
I practice doing comedy in the mornings, but if I don't get picked for the big gig on Saturdays, I just take the day off.
That's the thing, because you can have a terrible game as a footballer. You can score an own goal, you can, you know, get injured, and like, but you can't do that in comedy necessarily. Or like,
I mean, you can deal badly with a heckler.
Yeah, I suppose. But like, when you're at the level of earning the big bucks, I suppose you can't die in the same way. Am I wrong about that? I don't really know.
I think you can, unless you're like telly famous,
okay.
Where people are kind of still going to be like, well, we've had a good time. There's loads of people in the room who are just happy to be there looking at your stupid television face.
Yeah.
You're fine. But I think at all levels, you occasionally get the occasional death.
Big death.
Injury less.
So. Yeah, McIntyre must have to do a lot of stretching, though.
Yeah, Lee Evans as well. But
yeah.
You don't often hear about a comedian who's pulled a hamstring and is going to be out for 6 months.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, he was never the same after he picked that up, that injury.
Yeah.
His knee was gone. He just didn't have this. He lost a couple of yards of pace. He just wasn't as funny as the quicker comedians.
Oh, like that time when the wind changed and Stuart Lee was just frowning forever. Like,
yeah.
You just never hear about that. Yeah, okay, we've gone with Thomas Brolin as if you could compare yourself to a top player.
Yeah.
What's your best moment on the pitch?
My best moment on the pitch? I remember this quite clearly.
Cool.
Being...
I feel like I've hit the crux of...
Yeah.
I feel like I hit the jackpot.
I was at lower school and it was a penalty kick and the guy in goal was Aaron Nevzat, who was very cool and was very
Aaron
good.
Nevzat?
Aaron Nevzat.
That's a cool name.
I believe I'm getting that right. I haven't seen him in a while. But, he was very good at football. You know, he's one of the cool kids, and everyone knew he was one of the best footballers in the school. And he had the Manchester United yellow and green third kit that I'd never seen on anyone else.
Yeah.
It was a real aspirational item for me at the time. and he was in goal, and I had to kick a penalty kick, and I scored a penalty kick past Aaron Nevzat for about a week. I was a sort of living school legend, this guy. And there was a football tournament coming up the following week, and I was the guy then. It was like, this is, you know, the buzz was all around me.
Yeah,
this guy's gonna be the guy. If we get a penalty, we're gonna, you know,
give it all chipmunk.
He's gonna sort us out. He's gonna save the day. He's our penalty hero. And I remember being like both excited and anxious about this. Like at once, sort of swept away with this my own hype, but at the same time a nagging bit of me going, no, I think I might still be crap though. I think that might, like, it flies in the face of all my previous experience of football, like, that I scored that. And then to the point that I was literally sort of going, like, oh, but guys, like, I can't carry this team on my own, guys. Like, I mean, what if there aren't even any penalties? Like, what if that doesn't happen?
Yeah, exactly. My talent doesn't appear.
And then we did have a tournament. This tournament came around, and I was. You know, there was a penalty, and sure enough, I was called to the spot, and the painted spot on the proper tournament pitch was a lot further away from the goal than the estimated spot on the school field. And, you know, I ran to the ball and kicked it as hard as I could, and it rolled a little way and then sort of trickled towards the goal, and the goalkeeper just sort of calmly picked it up. Oh. And penalty kick abilities were sort of quietly dropped and never really spoken of again. Oh. And that was the end of that, really.
How did you style that one out? Did you was there much style going on?
Oh, I styled it out by I think by probably being immediately substituted and sort of picking at the dirt on my boots.
Yeah.
And, I styled it out. Right. Yeah, don't you worry about that. I was pretty cool.
Yeah, I kept the poker face.
All the way to the
bench.
Yeah.
Oh, that is a tragic football story.
Yeah, it was very, you know, 1 minute you've got everything, you've got the world at your feet, literally, and the next minute it's all just taken away from you.
It's a beautiful game, isn't it?
It is.
Truly a beautiful game.
I think it was sometime after that I invested in some goalkeeper gloves. Because I thought that was the way. I thought because I knew that sort of kids want to, you know, they want to score goals, they want to run around and tackle and pass, and it, like, the goalkeeper isn't necessarily the cherished role.
No.
So I thought if I got goalkeeper gloves, then I might get picked to be in goal. I'd be a go-to guy to
that
do
makes
that.
Makes sense. You got
and
a bit
also,
of an edge,
yeah. Yeah. And also, if the ball was punted at my head, I could put my hands up in front of that, and that'd be a legitimate option.
That's true. Instead of just constantly going through the logic of why you shouldn't head the football.
Yeah, I could just put up my hands, and there'd be no ridicule that would come. They go, "Oh, he brilliantly caught it." Instead of becoming a sort of first choice goalkeeper, what happened was I just became a kid who was happy to lend out his goalkeeping gloves to people who were better in goal than me. So,
oh man.
Like, I remember being in PE, and the PE teacher divided up the class into the kids who were all right at football and the kids who were pretty rubbish at football. And I was
just like that. Sorry, just very law of the playground.
I mean,
is what I'm trying to say, and just very like that openly. Did they say?
I think it was unspoken.
Okay,
but
you were just having a look around, going,
yeah, you know which side of the line you were. You knew what the divide was,
yeah.
and you knew that kind of the PE teacher was spending most of his time with the good kids, trying to give him tactics and advice, and the rest of us, it was just like, okay, you just keep punting it about, divide yourselves into two teams, and pretty much have some fun. And I was in the good kids team. Mm. I was in the top half of this thing, and I was like, brilliant, I've made it. I mean, I was delighted. And then they did the classic footballing thing of getting two people to be captains. They picked the teams, and I was the last kid standing at the end who hadn't been picked for a team.
I like how you styled that out though, by saying you were the last kid standing, as if you
yeah, I was the last kid standing.
Exactly.
I
was the winner.
Yeah,
but the team, oh,
against
man.
the throes of adversity, I was still there, and it didn't sting quite as much as if you're on the playground and you're literally the last kid, because it was like, well, I'm still better than all those chumps over
that's
the
true
field.
Yeah,
until the PE teacher went, oh, okay, we've got an odd number here, you're left over, you go and join the other group.
Oh.
And that was me for the rest of the term then. I was in the, yeah.
So you were shafted?
Shafted on the first.
Unbelievable.
The first, yeah, first day. So, yeah, that's been very much the recurring theme of my footballing career.
Oh, that is harrowing. Again, just having everything. And then going to play in the sandpit with the rest.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine
yeah.
That's where they play. That's
try not
yeah.
to swallow your own tongue. So
yeah.
Just, you know.
So, what stopped you? Why aren't you now a professional footballer?
Well, I know it seems like that's the way things were heading, given the
story. Trajectory was all there.
Sure.
The underdog story, you know, arcs
sure.
and stuff, it was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of adversity.
I know,
you must get really good.
I know you're
yeah.
expecting a sort of training montage just around the corner with
yeah.
an 80s hair metal theme tune
yeah.
where I turned everything around.
Yeah. When can we stop playing the Rocky music? Yeah.
but no, I just sort of drifted away from it. And by the time I got to university, it was just like, well, there's no need for me ever to attempt to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
But there is kind of a horrible coda for my football
okay.
story. Like, given that I don't really pay any mind to football at all anymore, but there's a kind of horrible coda. In my first year at university, I was invited by some guys on my course to go and watch a football game.
To watch, okay, cool.
And I wasn't really interested, but I at the same time, it was a first year, I wanted to get on with people, I wanted to make friends.
Of course.
And
is this like live? Is this in a stadium or just in the pub? Or what are we talking?
No, at the stadium.
Right.
I think it was like Northampton Town.
Cool.
And And they said, oh, you know, it'll be fun, we'll have beers. And again, beers were something that I was only really interested in to grease the wheels of social mobility. Like, I didn't like beer or football, but if I could pretend to like both hard enough, this would be okay.
Yeah.
And we went along and we were watching the game. And one particular player was pointed out to me by these other guys. And they said, see that player there? He's been caught recently. It's a bit of gossip, a bit of scandal. He was caught recently.
Wow.
And it's come out as common knowledge, but it's come out that he was caught with the coach's wife and a banana, which he was using the banana like to pleasure her.
Oh my goodness!
Right,
it's just like dirty Cluedo.
Yeah, it's in the in the changing rooms with the coach's wife with a banana.
Yeah.
And they said. Right, and that's what happened. And I thought, oh, wow, okay. And they said, so what we do, whenever that player gets the ball, we're going to make monkey noises at him. Everyone's going to make monkey noises at him.
Oh my god, I feel I'm two steps ahead of...
I mean, I was very naive. And so this guy, every time he got the ball, and I should point out at this point as well, for anyone at home who's ahead of me, I have no memory of this guy's name or what he looked like.
Race?
Whatsoever. I have no memory. I have no memory. All I can do is make educated guesses at this point, okay. Right? And this is genuinely horrendous. But every time this guy got the ball, me and these guys and other people in our side of the fandom would make these monkey noises at him. And I remember there being a guy, I thought at the time he was like a policeman, but he might just have been some sort of steward or something. He had like a luminous jacket on. And he had glasses. I remember that. And I remember him sort of staring up at us with this look of disgust on his face, you know, this absolute disgust, like looking at us. I remember thinking, oh, come on, chill out, mate. I mean, you know.
We've all heard the story.
Fair's fair. If you get caught with a coach's missus and a banana, you're going to expect a bit of ribbing, right? I mean, this is the football. We're lads at the football. You have a bit of a laugh, a bit of a tease, a bit of a joke, right? And genuinely just thought that was what it was. That was all it was. And I just went away from that experience thinking that was what had happened. And literally about 4 years later, I was just thinking in the kitchen about that time I went to a football match, and like a thunderbolt from the side,
oh my god.
I think that might have been racist chanting. Oh. So
you haven't got to the bottom of that, I guess. You haven't got back to those
people.
Well,
I'm not in touch with those guys anymore. They weren't people that I sort of stayed friends with.
Yeah.
Although, to my shame, the reason that I didn't stay friends with them had nothing to do with the racist chanting, because I didn't know that's what they were doing. I never confronted them. Because I was so naive. I came from a small town. There wasn't really any racism going on. You know, because I came from a small enough town that none of the working class people felt threatened.
Yeah.
You know, no one's jobs were being taken away by any minorities. They were coming in just being a nice part of the community. But I say working class people. I mean, these were like university educated people I was with, and we were doing this. It's horrendous.
I'm fascinated by the idea of whether that story is completely fabricated, and he was just like, oh, Chris doesn't look like a racist, but if I tell him this story, he'll join in with the lads. Have you considered that possibility?
I feel like they must have known what they were doing. I feel like they were trying to pull the wool over my eyes and get me to join in a thing, because they thought, oh, if we just say this is what we're doing,
and it's so convoluted,
he might be a bit, oh, that Chris, he's a bit right on, isn't he, with his not doing racist chanting.
Yeah.
Let's kind of fool him, unless someone had kind of somehow fooled them. But that seems even more convoluted and unlikely, that they were then passing on this second-hand knowledge of a story about this one player in the football. Genuinely, I'm filled with regret for this thing that I didn't know I was doing.
That's
it's
mental.
Appalling behaviour.
I really, and again, like, this is maybe appalling on my part, but now I really need to know who that player is. I know you don't know, but I need, maybe if someone can write in. We haven't had any letters to the podcast.
No.
If someone decides to write one in.
I mean, you'd be looking at Northampton Town, I believe it was versus Rushden and Diamonds, 2003 to 2006 era, and then, I mean, if it was purely just racially motivated chanting, then it could have been anyone of,
we'll go through
of
the
a,
team sheets.
Of a minority that played for either of those teams.
Goodness.
So
fascinating.
Oh yeah,
And so, that's why you're no longer a professional footballer.
That's, yeah, that, well, that's just the worst. That's a, I kind of feel like I should come clean and apologise for that behaviour. I'm sorry that I did that.
That's,
I would not have done that.
That's perfectly fine. This is like confession.
Okay.
This is what this kicking.
I mean, but we, that can't really work though, because you, as another sort of white guy, can't absolve me of my racism. That feels
no,
like it shouldn't.
No, I've got in trouble for that in the past.
Yeah,
right,
you're
yeah.
not the person to do that. But equally, if we asked a black guy, that would seem a bit token. So there's not really any absolving. There's just me saying, sorry about that, guys. I really didn't know what
yeah.
I was doing. But genuinely, like, the idea, and this was even 10 years ago, the idea that there was kind of racism happening that openly and publicly kind of surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And in light of recent events, the fact that it's still happening is pretty appalling.
It's
so
pretty terrifying, to be honest. So you've listened to some episodes. You know that I'm building a team.
Yes, yes.
And I very much need to know where you think you should fit on that team.
Yeah, well, I don't know what places you've already filled by.
I can give you the rundown, actually.
Okay.
I've got it written down here somewhere. Okay, so the current team, we have in goal, Darren J. Coles. Phil, you're talking about your days in goal. That position is off limits, I'm afraid.
Fine. I'm very happy to lend in my gloves.
Okay. That is good.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
pick on your actual role. Got Sarah Breeze at right back.
Yeah.
With Dan Kiss and Matt Rowe at centre back.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good partnership, I think.
Mm-hmm.
James Dunn just ahead of them in the defensive midfield Pirlo role. And then we've got Matt Lee at centre forward. So we've got no one in midfield. Apart from James Dunn, that sounds really unintentionally harsh.
Yeah.
We've got James Dunn in midfield.
But given that we know about his Pirlo based abilities, it's as good as no one, isn't it? It's good as no one. I would be quite happy to be lost in midfield,
yeah.
trying my hardest to do as little harm as possible, basically.
On the wing or in the middle, what are you thinking?
Okay, I think probably in the middle. Like, if you're a winger, there's a bit of pressure to actually deliver those pinpoint crosses.
Okay,
if you're in the middle, you can make
so you're ahead of James Dunn. Dunn, you know, picking up the slack, maybe doing a bit of sweeping behind. Maybe
yeah,
if
clearing
it
up my mistakes.
Yeah.
yeah.
But then once he's got the ball, then you can come into your own.
Yes. Making space for him to pass it to the centre forwards.
Exactly,
yeah,
yeah,
getting out of the way.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Right, you're in a centre midfield.
Mm-hmm.
Well done on that. Why should you be the captain of this team of ours? At the moment, the captain is Darren J. Coles.
Right. Well, I'm glad you asked. Because, I mean, Darren J. Coles, what sort of a choice is that for a captain? I think...
He's very vocal.
Yeah, isn't he, though?
Very talkative.
The reason I would make an excellent captain is because given... when I realised I was never going to make it on the pitch, I spent a lot of time playing computer football games,
mm-hmm.
and manager games, and honing my tactical mind.
Right.
But not only have I got that tactical edge, but also I'm very aware of my limitations as a player, which I think would mean I would keep a cool head.
Mm-hmm.
I would be able to survey what was going on around me,
yeah.
and be able to give the best advice, the best tactics, encourage my team in the best way, without that ever being overridden by a sort of personal lust for glory.
I like that, a selfless captain. That's
yeah.
something that we have not seen so far in people's pitches.
I think I would not be... I'd be going, look, I'm probably going to fuck this up, so maybe pass it to that guy, he's a bit good, and then you guys push down on the wing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't at any point be going glory hunting or going, oh, pass it to me, guys, I'm going to get the winning goal. I'd be just working for the good of the team and trying to spare my own blushes by... Yeah,
that's like exactly what the sort of apprentice project managers should be and never are.
Yeah.
Where they're just... Yeah, I like that. A selfless captain.
Yeah.
I can see that catching on. Yeah, so, you know, I've heard enough. I think that's it. Congratulations.
Brilliant.
Captain of the team.
Thank you very much.
Well done.
That was great.
Thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
And there we are then, that was Chris Chopping. Big thanks for him for coming on. We've got 4 episodes left of this series, so let's see if he can hold on to the captaincy from there. He's sitting next to James Dunn, so it's a pretty solid centre midfield so far. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you want to keep sharing, keep telling your friends, it would just be good to see how far this thing can go, really. It's just a weird little project of mine. Next week, we've got another great guest, so I hope you can join me then. Bye-bye.